Chapter 17. But there was no hilarity in the little town that tranquil Saturday afternoon. The Harpers and Aunt Polly's family were being put into mourning with great grief and many tears. An unusual quiet possessed the village, although it was ordinarily quiet enough in all conscience. The villagers conducted their concerns with an abstracted air and talked little, but they sighed often. The Saturday holiday seemed a burden to the children. They had no heart in their sports and gradually gave them up. In the afternoon, Becky Thatcher found herself moping about the deserted schoolhouse yard and feeling very melancholy. But she found nothing there to comfort her. She soliloquized,
"Oh, if I only had his brass andiron knob again, but I haven't got anything now to remember him by."
And she choked back a little sob. Presently, she stopped and said to herself,
"It was right here. Oh, if it was to do over again, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it for the whole world. But he's gone now. I'll never, never, never see him anymore."
This thought broke her down, and she wandered away with the tears rolling down her cheeks. Then quite a group of boys and girls, playmates of Tom's and Joe's, came by and stood looking over the paling fence and talking in reverent tones of how Tom did so-and-so the last time they saw him and how Joe said this and that small trifle, pregnant with awful prophecy, as they could easily see now. And each speaker pointed out the exact spot where the lost lad stood at the time and then added something like, "And I was a-standing just so, just as I am now, and as if you was him. I was as close as that, and he smiled just this way. And then something seemed to go all over me like, awful, you know, and I never thought what it meant, of course, but I can see now." Then there was a dispute about who saw the dead boys last in life, and many claimed that dismal distinction and offered evidences more or less tampered with by the witness. And when it was ultimately decided who did see the departed last and exchanged the last words with them, the lucky parties took upon themselves a sort of sacred importance and were gaped at and envied by all the rest. One poor chap, who had no other grandeur to offer, said with tolerably manifest pride in the remembrance,
"Well, Tom Sawyer, he licked me once."
But that bid for glory was a failure. Most of the boys could say that, and so that cheapened the distinction too much. The group loitered away, still recalling memories of the lost heroes in awed voices. When the Sunday school hour was finished the next morning, the bell began to toll instead of ringing in the usual way. It was a very still Sabbath, and the mournful sound seemed in keeping with the musing hush that lay upon nature. The villagers began to gather, loitering a moment in the vestibule to converse in whispers about the sad event. But there was no whispering in the house. Only the funereal rustling of dresses as the women gathered to their seats disturbed the silence there. None could remember when the little church had been so full before. There was finally a waiting pause, an expected dumbness, and then Aunt Polly entered, followed by Sid and Mary, and then by the Harper family, all in deep black. And the whole congregation, the old minister as well, rose reverently and stood until the mourners were seated in the front pew. There was another communing silence, broken at intervals by muffled sobs, and then the minister spread his hands abroad and prayed. A moving hymn was sung, and the text followed, "I am the resurrection and the life."